A decade ago now, the German news magazine Der Spiegel published a disturbing interview with then-Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. In it, the president suggested to the somewhat bewildered interviewer that the existence of the Holocaust should be a matter of debate and impartial research. As shocking and as outrageous as such statements always are, what was all the more disturbing about the interview was the way, the clever way, that the Iranian leader managed to imply that by accepting the Holocaust as historical fact, the German journalist was somehow rejecting the ideals of open debate, rational inquiry, intellectual freedom, all those values. We are of the opinion, he declared, that the truth about the Holocaust will be revealed all the more clearly if there is more research into it and more discussion about it. An impartial group needs to come together to investigate and render an opinion on this very important subject. Ahmadinejad cloaked his own anti-Semitism and Holocaust revisionism in the guise of the values that so many Westerners hold dear: impartial inquiry and the need to give equal hearing to all sides of the debate. Stunning as the Iranian leader's comments were at the time, today we might simply shrug our shoulders at them. For we live in a culture across the West that has enshrined ignorance as a virtue and made of truth a relative thing. This morning's Independent carries a report of a recent poll in Great Britain that says that more than 2.6 million Britons are Holocaust deniers. We live in a time when misinformation and deception are favored means of countering truths we find inconvenient or unlike those we don't like, which is to say that we live in a time when lies are acceptable tactics and truth is a regular casualty in public speech. The situation in the time of Jesus apparently was not all that different, as we discern in the words Barbara read about oath-taking in today's reading from the Sermon on the Mount. In the Hebrew tradition out of which Jesus came, oath-taking was a matter of serious consequence. In the absence of voice recorders, notary publics, judges and juries, God was often invoked to confirm and judge what people said and to affirm their intention to perform the duties they had promised to fulfill. Over time, an elaborate system of oaths and of many varieties developed for use in a host of situations. And not so surprisingly, apparently there also developed an equal number of deceptive schemes for getting around the implied obligations of the oaths. Some ancient Jews actually devised a shifty scheme according to which certain pious-sounding oaths were not binding at all. So it was over against these casual uses of oaths, over against deceit and trickery, that Jesus spoke these words in the Sermon on the Mount, positing his own command of truth-telling. The Old Testament law had condemned false oaths, that is, promising in God's name to do something and then not doing it. But Jesus swept away oaths of every kind. Since everything you say and do is done in the sight of God, let everything you say and do be honest and truthful, he says. Jesus warned against the double standard of truth that oaths themselves imply. We always live and speak in God's presence, he said, and thus the integrity of speech and the keeping of pledges in life is always our obligation. The message then was clear, and the message now is as clear as well. Even in an age of moral complexity, this command of Jesus stands out for its relative simplicity. Live by truth. Tell the truth. You're given power over your own words, so when you mean yes, say yes. When you mean no, say no. Plain speaking is the rule. Some of you know the story of that group of high school boys, sorely afflicted with spring fever, who decided to skip school one spring morning. They finally wheeled into school around lunchtime and, to their dismay, promptly ran into their calculus teacher. She asked them where they'd been, and they told her that their car had had a flat tire and it had taken them all morning to get the spare fixed and put on. Much to their relief, the teacher just smiled and said, "Well, okay, no problem. But," she said, "you did miss a pop quiz this morning, and I'll give you a chance to make it up rather than receive a zero if you'll show up right after school today." Well, they weren't thrilled, but they agreed, and so they came at the end of the school day to her classroom. She spaced them apart in the room and asked them to take out a sheet of paper, and she said, "It's just a one-question quiz. Which tire was flat?" That teacher knew something about deception and also a way to get at the truth. As I look at our world today, I believe one of the most discouraging signs of our times is the dishonesty and the deceit that so many have come to accept in public speech and public lives, and our difficulty in finding a way to get at the truth exactly. Jesus' words from the Sermon on the Mount reveal that disregard for the truth is a problem far older than our own memory. But in our own day, we can surely sense a wanton disregard for truth-telling and a careless pollution of language, the misuse of the gift of language to deceive and obscure reality. Language pollution has become an acknowledged, if not accepted, part of life in many spheres today. And in nowhere as much, I suppose, as in the political arena, where word choices often seem to have little or no basis in reality. Now, to be fair, of course, imprecise speech, nebulous speech, has long been a necessary tool of the political trade to allow politicians to light step around sensitive issues. My favorite case in point was a letter sent decades ago by Florida's then 7th District Congressman Billy Matthews to a constituent who wanted to know Matthews' stand on the issue of government control of sales of liquor. Matthews wrote, "My dear friend, I had not intended to discuss this controversial subject at this particular time. However, I want you to know that I do not shun a controversy. On the contrary, I'll take a stand on any issue at any time, regardless of how fraught with controversy it may be. You've asked me how I feel about whiskey. Here's how I stand on this question. If when you say whiskey, you mean the devil's brew, the poison scourge, the bloody monster that defiles innocence, dethrones reason, destroys the home, creates misery and poverty, then certainly I'm against it with all my power. But if when you say whiskey, you mean the oil of conversation, the philosophic wine, the ale that is consumed when good friends get together, that puts a song in their hearts and laughter on their lips and the warm glow of contentment in their eyes, if you mean that drink, the sale of which pours into our treasuries untold billions of dollars, which are used to provide tender, loving care for little crippled children and to build highways and hospitals and schools, then certainly I'm in favor of it. This is my stand," he said, "and I will not compromise." Obviously, tact is important in every profession and every relationship, and we suffer these days from lack of political leadership, from political leadership that's devoid of tact. But there are many times today when speech is designed not out of thoughtful consideration of others, but for the simple purpose of hiding deceptions, The results are anything but humorous. Think again of the political realm over the last 60 years. Remember the way the phrase states' rights was used for years to hide the more insidious and destructive segregationist spirit behind it. Remember Oliver North in his 1987 testimony in the Iran-Contra hearings, denied lying before Congress, arguing instead that he had merely provided input radically different from the truth. And of course, there was Bill Clinton's much heralded self-serving hedging on what the meaning of is. But deception in the public sphere certainly didn't end there. Today, public speech is chock full of alternative facts, a euphemism for outright lies, not to mention distortions and half-truths. Whether we're speaking of politics or discussions of scientific evidence or business and banking or private speech, the fact is we don't put a very high premium on truth-telling, on plain speaking, if you will. The American poet and social critic James Russell Lowell wrote a provocative anti-slavery poem back in 1845 that referred to that national struggle as a titanic battle of truth over against falsehood. Entitled The Present Crisis, the poem became the basis of a hymn we've probably sung before here, Once to Every Man and Nation. Lowell lamented that the truth seemed forever on the scaffold and wrong forever on the throne. But that scaffold rules the future, he said. That scaffold sways the future. The battle still goes on, even now leaving casualties of lies and deception all along the way, from the halls of power to the personal computers of cyber bullies to the conspiracy theories of fake newscasts. Jesus said it didn't matter what the arena was, whether it was sacred or secular. He said it mattered not whether the speech was a common word or a pious oath. All speech is uttered in the presence of God and thus is worthy of plain speaking. Say what you mean. Let your yes be yes. Mean what you say. Let your no be no. Well, let the church at least do so. Let us lead the way, perhaps. Let us do our part. Jesus calls us to choose truth over falsehood, to a determination to work for the sanctification of language so as to work for the sanctification of life itself. Lack of integrity of language leads to the loss of integrity in every sphere. It denotes separation from God and from one another. Repentance begins with the recovery of the integrity of our language. Speak the truth. That might be a place to start in learning how to live the truth. Samuel Johnson said in 1750 that there were always people who confused the praise of goodness with the practice. We know the pitfalls of pretense and self-deception. The problem is how to escape the trap, how to escape falsehood into truth. I'm here to tell you today that Christ offers a way out of that trap, not just by example, but also and more importantly by the redemption of our lives through the shattering of the lies we have come to accept about ourselves and about our world. Such redemption can be liberating, friends. Living lives of falsehood and deception is stressful. It is far simpler and much more faithful simply to tell the truth. Honesty is a virtue our world so sorely needs. It is a virtue that is deeply at the heart of Christian life, as servants of the one who spoke of himself as the way, the truth, and the life. Grace gives us courage to start the journey and to fortify us for the trip. Jesus binds us together in a gracious, supportive community of faith, in which truth can be taken seriously, even in the midst of a world that seems to cherish lies and deceit. while back, I heard the story about two pastors in the Cajun-speaking region of South Louisiana. Pastor Boudreaux was the part-time pastor of the local Cajun Baptist Church, and Pastor Thibodeau was the minister of the Covenant Church across the road. They were both standing by the road one day, pounding a sign into the ground that read, "The end is near. Turn yourself round now before it be too late." A car sped past just then, and the driver leaned out his window and yelled, "You religious nuts." Just seconds later, from beyond the curve in the road, they heard screeching of tires and a crash and a splash. The Reverend Boudreaux turned to Pastor Thibodeau and asked, "Do you think maybe the sign should just read, 'Bridge out'?" Jesus said, "Say what you mean. Let your yes be yes. Mean what you say. Let your no be no." He was talking about much more than a matter of clarity. He spoke of the very foundation of faithful living. Speak the truth. Speak the truth. Live the truth. Yes, yes, no, no. Plain speaking. Oh, that Jesus. Always so full of such radical ideas.